The show is all about digging into what actually happened, right? The motive, the timeline, the details most people skip right past. If you're the type who can't stop breaking the story down, Zen AI is built for you. It's called vibecasting, and a vibecast is just a conversation, the kind you're already having every time a game's on. Right now, Zen AI is paying new vibecasters to record their first one, a sportscast about the team you love. Call the game live as it happens, or sit down after and break the whole thing down play by play. Bring your own co-host, or find another diehard in Zen AI's network to go back and forth with. Here's the part I like. Your phone is the studio. No gear, no booth, no setup. You just talk and their AI producer handles the edit, turning your conversation into something worth sharing. Humans are the talent, AI is the infrastructure. Vibes required, production optional. It doesn't have to be long, polished, or a whole series. One good conversation counts and you get paid for it. It's invite-only beta right now, so get on the waitlist before spots fill. Go to zen.ai, that's zen.ai, or grab the direct link in our show notes.
The first ransom note said Nancy Guthrie was safe but scared. But now a bombshell revelation and a new report claims that a later message, just a couple of days later, that in another ransom note, something much different was suggested. So tonight we're trying to separate fact from fiction as best we can. Also later on STS tonight, you know, the COE, the chief of everything. The wife, the executive producer, she runs the show. Well, she recently sat down with Ramona, who heads up Buscando Corazones Nogales. They're a volunteer search organization. I have no idea what it stands for. I just know how to read Spanish beautifully. And we'll take you inside that search with the COE, who speaks fluent Spanish. In just one moment.
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, STS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. Happy Monday if you're watching this live. First day of the week. I never love it, but it happens. And this is the global phenomenon, bringing you the very best guests in all of true crime. To all the fathers out there, I hope you had an amazing day. I sure did. And it ended with yet another tow to the Ford dealership. If you want to see all the ins and outs, you've got to follow me on Instagram at Surviving the Survivor. What would a day be without a tow, especially a Father's Day? So Surviving the Survivor on Instagram, and you'll find it all, everything you ever wanted to know. But you might want to know about what's happening with Nancy Guthrie. It is hard to believe. It is day 142 in the disappearance of probably the highest profile missing persons case that the United States has seen in decades. Eitan Pates, by the way, was one of the first and most notable. And just today, the Supreme Court overturned the overturning of a conviction, reconvicting the man they found guilty. So that's fascinating. If you don't know about Eitan Pates, you can Google him. He was the first ever, I believe, to be on the back of a milk carton. Nancy Guthrie, never on the back of a milk carton, but we've got digital media now. And you have to go back to February 1st. That's when authorities say she vanished from her home, and under circumstances that are still unclear to many people. You've all seen that Nest home camera video, and we're going to discuss why this is back in the news today and what is going on. But first, a quick message. Look, I'm not going to tell you I'm having a midlife crisis, but I'm not going to tell you I'm not having a midlife crisis. I mean, one second, I'm a state high school champ at Highland Park High School in New Jersey. The next, I'm a decrepit old man in Miami Beach wearing glasses with eye bags, crow's feet, and not one, but two torn meniscus. But thank God I found Cowboy Colostrum. It is the highest quality bovine, that is cow colostrum, that you can get in the United States. And it is absolutely dense with nutrients. It is amazing for your health. It improves gut health, and along with it, just about everything else, like your hair, your nails. It even reduces bloating. But listen, I would ask Carm for her colostrum, but that would be sick even for us. It is magical. It has literally changed the way that I look and feel. And don't worry, because those little baby cows known as calves get the colostrum before you do, because they need it as well. And because of that, Carm is now also using Cowboy Colostrum. For a limited time, our listeners get up to 25% off their entire order. You just head to cowboycolostrum.com/surviving. Use code surviving at checkout. That is 25% off when you use code surviving at cowboycolostrum.com/surviving. And we're building a new studio. And once I have a teleprompter, I promise these ads will be half the time. I have to memorize all that. So that's kind of crazy. But in all seriousness, look at my skin. It's glowing. And it's because of that colostrum. And you know who else is glowing? Lieutenant Bob Krieger, former Pima County SWAT commander. This guy used to snipe at people and still does. You've got retired homicide detective Cloyd Steiger, who's got just a ton of experience at the Seattle Police Department with well over 15 years. Well, how many were you on homicide for, Cloyd? You're muted. So what, hold on. Let me. I think you're going to have to unmute yourself there, Cloyd.
Harry.
We tried.
One more. One more, Cloyd.
Oh, there we go. I was in homicide for 22 years.
22 years. It took a while to get the answer, but I love it. That's a long time. It's a bevy of experience. And last but not least, coming to us from a new location in his place in New York, and I love it, David Sarney, retired NYPD detective. Let me obviously start with the man who calls this place home, and that is Bob Krieger, day 142. I know I've asked you this before. Did you ever think we would say day 142 in the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie?
No, I did not. Never thought it would take this long with as little bit of information and it, what seems like a little bit of headway is making its way in the investigation. Didn't think we'd be here.
Cloyd Steiger, I'm sure you have a couple of cases still to this day that gnaw at you, even after 22 years in homicide and probably another 14 in the Seattle Police Department. But with a case this high profile, with this many eyeballs and the FBI, you know, neck deep in it, are you stunned that it is day 142 in this case?
I can't say I'm stunned. I'm a little disappointed, but I mean, sometimes these things take months or years to resolve.
What are you leaning towards, Cloyd, months or years? Because there's a difference.
Maybe 1 year. I don't think it should take much more than that. It depends on what they're doing. I don't know. Of course, we're all talking blind. I don't know what they're doing to move the case forward. So assuming they're doing the right things, a few more months.
Yeah. Breaking news here, by the way, which I tweeted out. You can follow me on Twitter at PodcastSTS. George Pino, this is a big case here in Miami. It was suggested that we cover it. I just didn't think anyone really knew or, to be honest, cared that much about it. But it's a terrible case where his daughter's best friend and another young woman, I believe, were both killed in a boating accident, which happens in Miami. Sadly, we know someone in a similar situation, a couple of people, and he was just found after a couple of week trial not guilty. Melissa Navone here saying it's disgusting. He was found not guilty. Someone else just said they're happy for the family. I'll be honest, I just didn't cover the case that closely. But when we have a trial here that we do cover, we will be covering it that much more closely. David Sarney, to you, I mean, New York is the epicenter of the world, at least in New Yorkers' eyes, and that's where I'm from. But with Nancy Guthrie, this is the epicenter of missing persons cases. I mean, you can say what you want, but as far as missing persons, you probably remember Eitan Pates. But outside of that, I can't remember a much bigger missing persons case than Nancy Guthrie. So same question, 142 days into this, did you think we would be here? What is going on?
You didn't think it was going to be this long. And the problem was, again, it comes back to evidence. You know, we know we eventually find out it's an abduction, was from a missing person to an abduction. And there was a lot of things that may have, you know, we're looking back. What happens with the media and with us is we don't have all the nuts and bolts of the case. We're basing a lot of the information on what has been released by the police department and by the FBI and other agencies. We didn't expect it to be this long. We thought, you know, we all have this horrible feeling that this was going to end badly because of the amount of time it took just in the beginning. These cases don't go easy. The problem has always been the evidence. What evidence do we have support? Anything to show this abduction, about kidnapping notice and all of this? Was she an abduction? We had all these speculations. We stick to the facts. We have information that she was abducted. And what comes from that is the evidence you had, the blood on the scene, the house is a crime scene, that should have been, that has to go through it. We didn't expect it to be this long, but, you know, these, where it happened, the location that it happened, it just, there's not a lot of video surveillance evidence that was able to help with the investigation on this.
Yeah. For those who, I guess, have been living under a rock, just again to reiterate a little bit, Nancy Guthrie, back on February 1st of this year, vanishes from her Tucson home in the very nice area of the Catalina foothills. Investigators do find what they say is evidence of what appears to be a violent abduction. Excuse me. Blood belonging to Nancy is found. And ironically, first really, I'm sure police discovered it first and sheriff's deputies discovered it first, but it was Brian Enton, a friend of ours and friend of the show, who went there with a camera. And people then asked, well, why didn't you close off the crime scene, which was one of the other big issues at the onset and maybe still is a big issue. Surveillance footage was finally obtained. And you see this guy, the Ring door or the Google Nest camera guy, different names. That's the guy I'm talking about. And apparently the security equipment appears to have been tampered with. So you're asking yourselves, as I did, why is this back in the news today? And it has a lot to do with a guy named Howard Blum. And if you guys watched his show, you've seen him before. He wrote a book on the Idaho Four. He's a very well-known, longtime investigative reporter from New York City. And Steve Cohen is busy trying to get him on the show tomorrow night. But let's kind of go through this a step at a time, because it involves breaking things down here. So, Bob, I'm going to start with you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a first ransom communication back around a day or so after the quote-unquote abduction. So around February 2nd or 3rd, you get this first ransom communication. A ransom note is received, and they have a demand for $4 million in Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
What is so key here is Nancy is described in that first ransom note that we know of as safe but scared. And this person, whoever sent this, reportedly knew what Nancy was wearing and some details about a damaged floodlight, information from the crime scene. So now everyone is kind of scratching their heads going, well, how come these ransom notes haven't been taken more seriously? Bob, where do you stand here? We're taking a trip down memory lane. And then what Howard Blum says is going to take us for a little spin in a few minutes.
Sure. To say they weren't taken seriously, that I would say that's ridiculous. The second that came into investigators, they start working it from every angle. Unfortunately, the investigating agencies, the sheriff's department, the FBI, the CIA, the KGB, they are not paying people's ransom. That's just first and foremost. That would be something that would have to be worked out through the, you know, with the family and things like that. So I'm sure there were conversations being had there. You know, how legitimate was it? We're all assuming that this is what was from the person who took Nancy. But I've also read and seen and heard so many different stories about you could have pieced a lot of the things that were in that initial note from what I've heard, because I've never seen it. And that's another thing to remember. You know, you got the ones going to TMZ. Are those the same ones that are making it to KVOA and KOLD and the same ones making it to the sheriff's department? Are there different players with all these notes? Because we do know that there were other players that weren't involved that were sending them as well. So vetting all of that stuff. That being said, it was taken incredibly seriously. I'm certain of that. They looked into it. They did everything that they could. And decisions were made. Do we pay? Do we not pay? And it moved on from there.
Hmm. And Bob, just what's the general tenor? I think that the public is probably just living their lives day to day, but you're talking to guys who are still working and talking to guys who are retired. So amongst law enforcement, what is the general, you know, feeling 142 days in there?
Still just doing their job, doing what they can to get more bits and pieces of evidence, to relook at what they've already covered, to go back. Just to keep covering their bases, as long as she's still out there and not found and not home, the investigators are going to keep working it. So, you know, everyone says, is there frustrations or not? Everyone knows, you know, if you don't succeed at something, no matter what your job is, you're going to get a little frustrated. Look at Wemby. He walked off the court without shaking hands. Frustration from a youngster. He'll learn from that. These guys, these investigators, even if they're not experienced maybe in the homicide unit, they're still tenured cops. So they know the day in and day out they're doing their job. They're going to keep doing it until they get to the next breaking point, whatever that might be.
And by the way, Bob Krieger making a reference, I should say, to the New York Knickerbockers, the 2026 world champions. My dad would have loved to be here to watch that in the world's most famous arena, the mecca of sports, Madison Square Garden, a place David Sarney knows really well. So congrats to the Knicks and Jalen Brunson and the rest of the team. I should have worn my Knicks jersey today. One more thing for Bob, and then I promise we're getting back to Cloyd and David here. I thought Arizona, the DA there, was looking into Nanos for the perjury charges. What is going on with this embattled, embittered sheriff in Pima County, who we thought at one point you might take his place, Bob Krieger? So I don't know if you're the best guy to ask, but nevertheless, what's going on with Sheriff Chris Nanos?
He's been quiet lately, obvious reasons. It wasn't the Arizona DA, it was the Arizona Attorney General who's looking into it. And they're still looking into it from what I understand, looking into some of the claims that he made, some of the facts that he did not disclose when he was hired, some issues with statements he made under oath that were not true. So that is still going along. From what I've heard, probably within the next few weeks, there could be some eyes opened up on what's happening there.
Mm. By the way, if you're new to the show, which the story brings in a lot of new people, Monday through Thursday, we do a civilized panel, three amazing guests like you're seeing right now, the best in the business. Fridays, it's like a feel-good Friday, a little less serious when my co-host, my mother, the oldest true crime podcaster in America, joins me at 1 o'clock. However, every last Friday, which is this Friday, I believe, the great Phil Waters, F.I.L., the homicide detective from Houston, and Scott Duffy will be here on every last Friday, which is this week. So get ready for Phil and Scott. Phil is coming to us live from Hawaii with Nugget. So he will be here. But please like and subscribe. We've got a Patreon page that's active. Cloyd, going back to you and this first ransom note, in that demand note for $4 million in Bitcoin and describing Nancy as safe but scared, they do note what Nancy was wearing and some details about a damaged floodlight that you would only know from the crime scene. So, I mean, it seems like it's incredibly critical. I feel like I've never focused on it that critically, but just going back in time now, and you know, you forget bits and pieces of this, that first ransom letter, which investigators, I believe on the record, are saying was legit. I don't know. Should there, to Bob's point, they were working it, but should they have been working it more feverishly? Your thoughts?
Well, I'm sure they're working it feverishly. You know, I think, did it come in by email or something? So they got to try to.
I think it was email.
Yeah, they got to try to track that down. You know, the big problem there is show proof of life, and they couldn't. That's why nobody ever paid money, because she wasn't alive. You know, you got to show proof of life. You can't just say she's fine. I don't know. It doesn't work. You got to show proof of life and show that she is alive before anybody's going to do anything. But still, they're going to be tracking. And then I'm sure it's a laborious process to track his emails, because I'm sure these people tried real hard to cover up where they're coming from. And, you know, they could have come from a public library or something. Who knows? You know, they tracked it down. Again, we don't know because we're not in there and hearing it, but I'm sure they're working on it hard.
Yeah. And I mean, David, obviously Cloyd knows a lot. He's got a ton of knowledge and he's talking about proof of life. But going back to that first ransom note again, the email where the person or people are describing what she's wearing and knowing some details of the, you know, of the crime scene, if that's you investigating, are you just stopped in your tracks at that point? Because you got to say to yourself, these people have got to be real.
Well, you're working every lead, and you know, this is what people, you know, a lot of times we editorialize what detectives are doing, investigators are doing. They work on the facts. The facts are, when they got that information in and they got that ransom note, they're going to try to get the IP address. That's what you're looking to do. Things don't happen in 5 to 10 minutes. That's the problem with this. Can this IP address have been spoofed where it came from somewhere else? You know, it takes time on that end. They're going to work the lead just because, you know, and I say this because unfortunately when it comes to media, media tends to hyperactively invest, say we're doing nothing right, we're doing nothing wrong. We're doing what we can with what they have. And that's what the detectives were doing. They didn't just say, oh, we have a lead and just throw it to the side. They worked that lead to what they could. You know, we don't give out info. We don't give ransom money for $4 million. People are going, well, they should have given them something. What were you getting out of it? That lead they have to show that there was, they have some intimate knowledge on that, on Nancy at the time of that abduction. They're working it. They work it to what they can. And I say this at the time, we have the location, the only place we know that the perpetrators or perpetrator was with Nancy was at that house. DNA is on scenes. We know about that. You know, when you go into a location, do you leave something behind? Based on the information that we have from the video, from that video still, that person avoided the opportunity for DNA to be there. Is there DNA on the scene? Yes, but DNA doesn't raise its hand and go, I'm here, DNA, pick me up. I'm here, DNA. You have to find it. That's what it comes down to. Was there ability to find anything, signs of a struggle, and able to get contact DNA, recover that? And again, it takes time. You don't always get an absolute match or hit when it comes to DNA. You get sometimes mixed results where you can't determine anybody. So that also takes a longer time to do. So we don't know what was recovered from the scene. We have a ransom note that is a valid ransom note based on the information you have. But here it comes again. What can you do with that information? You work on the IP address, the validity of the note. You know, then they try to work on that Bitcoin thing by putting money into the system. People, you know, you could always Monday morning quarterback. But what the detectives did is what they could do at the time of the information coming into them.
A very important question. Someone asked if your cat has just one eye, and I know you've addressed that before, David. The answer?
Yes, it is Mo Green. Named for the Godfather. You know, we all know Mo Green was shot in the eye. It was personal. It was not business, as Hyman Roth said.
Yeah. So we're answering the question. Yes, it is a one-eyed cat, but we love this cat, Mo Green, regardless. Let me go back the other way here. Cloyd, even if DNA came back, you won't hear about it. Do you agree? Before you answer that, lest you think we're not a global phenomenon, South Australia is here. But, I mean, what about that? I mean, the FBI, they are notoriously tight-lipped. So even if there is some sort of DNA, and wrong acronym, but if there is some sort of DNA hit, would we even know about that, Cloyd?
No, we wouldn't, and we shouldn't, you know, until you're ready to make an arrest. You know, that all stuff, it all happens below the surface. And, you know, it does take time. And if there is foreign DNA found at the scene and they found it and identified it, you know, like you said, then, you know, if it's not in CODIS, the Combined DNA Index System, then you have to do genealogy. And that can take months because you're basically tracking birth and death records and finding relatives, presuming that somebody close enough in family has done a 23andMe or one of those home DNA tests. So it's even, they even get someone to start with, they have to have a starting point. You have to have, you know, they score those and you have to have, I don't remember what it was, a 3 or 4 score before it's viable. And then the genealogist starts from there and starts working down the genealogy until they get it down to 1 or 2 people. Then you have to go get those people and get a DNA sample either voluntarily or surreptitiously. So those things all take time.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that's the Golden State Killer. That's Brian Koberger. They're starting to use that quite a bit. So that's interesting. Here's something else that's interesting. Let me take an impromptu SCS poll. The trial for Derek Colella. He is the man charged with transmitting a fake ransom note to the family of Nancy Guthrie. He's scheduled to begin his trial June 23rd. Of this month at a federal courthouse in Tucson, Arizona. Bob Krieger, is this really going to go to a trial? And my question is, should I go to Tucson where I could finally meet Bob and Kurt Dabb, who couldn't come on the show tonight for other reasons, to cover this? Is this something you guys are interested in? Bob, is this really going to go to trial?
I can't imagine it'll actually go to trial. That's just my gut. But to answer your second question, absolutely you should come to Tucson. we got you got to make up for lost time from being here, and we got things to discuss.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Bob, I mean, it's a high profile case, but they're going to put this guy on trial in a federal court. Isn't there going to be some kind of plea deal cut before June 23rd?
I would assume so. I hadn't heard that. That's an incredibly fast turnaround also for a trial. Yeah. If he was just arrested that first couple of weeks of February to have a trial popping off in June at the federal level, it might be, I would imagine, if someone says a trial, it's a trial, but I would guess it was some kind of pre-trial hearing, a conference of some sort, something like that. But if it goes, man, you've got place, you've got open invites, you know that.
Yeah, but I read the same thing.
June 23rd is tomorrow, so
you better. Oh, I forgot about that. Is that really? Oh, that's a good point. You know what? I thought it was May. It's actually tomorrow's June. That's a minor detail. Yeah. So I guess we'll know very quickly whether it's going to trial. I guess I'm not going to get out for that trial then. It's so funny how quickly you lose track of time. Tucson does not want you YouTubers there. Don't worry. I'm not like the rest. I sit in a hotel room with air conditioning in front of my computer. Now I'll be out there. I was out there reporting in that heat a lot. But Bob, let me get – so here's the other – so now we're building up to why there's controversy today. So February 4th, there's another before I get there, let me ask you, Bob, because someone – this is interesting. Someone said it wasn't an email. It was through a media website tip line. What – do you know if that is the case? And if so, Bob Krieger, how is a media website tip line, them communicating through that different than, I guess, an other source of communication? I would assume they could track it through there.
Yeah, from what I heard, it was an email. Whether it came through, you know, if it was a media website, tracking area, you still have to put in information. There's still going to be trackable by IP addresses, a little bit different. Little bit different way of tracking it, but it's still going to go essentially that way. I had heard about this email. I had heard early on what it said. I also heard it was a direct email, and one of those that it may have gone to multiple outlets, but it did go to the investigators from what I understood early on.
Yeah. So David, just kind of building up this timeline. So we're talking basically this first ransom note comes like within a day or 2 days. Then another message, which is not really being described as a ransom note, arrives another day or so later, February 4th or 5th, and the communications are continuing. And now the demand increases from $4 million to $6 million. So there is a $2 million increase here, and the communications imply that Nancy is alive and well. And apparently it's still being treated publicly as a kidnapping for ransom case. So what do you make here? And the next ransom note is where we run into some conflict, which I'm going to get to. But what do you make of this price increase? Okay, so first we want $4 million, and now we want $6 million. And now it's appearing that at least the first ransom note is much more legit, right? And then you got this clown who's apparently going on trial tomorrow. So you don't know fact from fiction here, which is what we said off the top. But at least this first note, they had enough information that it appeared legit. And now they're asking to go from $4 to $6 million. Now that we've had 142 days, what do you make of that development?
Well, that could have been just an increase because the chance that she was either, we're dealing with individuals who are either very fortunate and not do and getting away with this right now. And have the ability to use the, somehow spoof this thing. We've focused on these emails. The reality is this. Okay, if we have them legit, where do we go from there? Where do we get, now we have these legitimate emails, they've raised the $6 million. Does that show desperation upon their part? Or is because the media push was so high, they decided to up the ante? We can't speculate that. We know it, we seem to be that there is, these notes are from the same or similar IP address, which means that could have been floated from different locations. We don't know. But that takes time to find out. It doesn't happen right away. And any of these, even in an anxious circumstance, we don't always get able to get the information right away. Yeah. So you're going to work, you're working that lead as you can. And you don't pay the ransom. That's just how it is. I mean, the reality is that in many cases, if the family is going to want to pay the ransom, the police walk away and say, go do what you want to do. It's on your own. I don't know who made decisions on the idea of the Bitcoin account and putting money into it. We don't know. There is leadership, which will then kind of push down to the rank and file to the investigators of what they want them to do. And sometimes does that go against what the investigator wants to be done? I work with bosses. You know, I tell them, do you want it done? You want it done right. And, you know, you can have that issue. You can push that pushback. We don't know what the decisions were made of, on those notes, whether to pursue them further, to give the ransom, to say no. We don't know who made those decisions on what level they were at.
Thank you. Cloyd, back to you. Detective Cloyd Steiger, former homicide detective in Seattle. This just back to this clown for a minute who may or may not be going on trial tomorrow, named Derek Colella, who apparently called in a fake, you know, ransom note or, you know, however he emailed it in. With a situation going on where you've got allegedly a real, at least one real ransom note, maybe two, I imagine they have shook this guy up and down six ways from Sunday. I mean, what do they do with this guy in terms of questioning to make sure that he was never attached to anybody potentially involved in this? And a huge thanks to Judy Herbert, who continues to be incredibly generous. But what are they doing with this guy who apparently seems benign, but, you know, wrote a fake letter?
Well, you know, any high profile case like this, you're going to get a bunch of climbers on that try to scam the system. And he may not be the only one. And I'm sure they were pretty convinced after looking into him, he wasn't involved in this directly. He's just some scammer nut or whatever. And so they're just treating that as that. So, you know, I don't know what they found out about him. I mean, maybe they saw that he was clear across the country and he was never in Arizona. I don't know, you know,
Cloyd, let me ask you this. I mean, just from your perspective, let's say you were the lead investigator on this, and I'm sure you've had very high profile cases in your own right being in Seattle. What's it like for all this, you know, outside quarterbacking 142 days later now? You know, you got us talking about it, many others talking about it, and you're the one investigating. How difficult or frustrating is it for that team of detectives in Pima County?
Well, the first thing is, if you're a detective involved in the nuts and bolts of this case, don't read any of this crap. Don't watch all this stuff. Just keep your nose to the grindstone and obey it. And I want to hit on something David said about high-profile cases and the chiefs and bosses releasing information. I had several really high-profile cases where I would have to have a meeting with bureau chiefs at the beginning, the very morning, and say what we were or we're not going to talk about. And I would frequently say all the things we're not going to talk about. And then the chief would go down to the news conference and say exactly the stuff I said we're not going to talk about. Because, I mean, they're idiots. I mean, they're just pencil pushers. They're not cops. You know, they're just, first of all, they're in their ego. And they think they know more because they're chiefs. And, you know, they become chiefs because they can't do the job. And so, you know, I don't have, they screw up more than anything. So but as a detective, you just got to blank all that out. Don't pay attention to anything anybody's saying and just do your job.
Bob Krieger, I imagine you agree with a lot of what Cloyd Steiger just said.
Absolutely. I've personally been involved with chiefs pushing information out that we asked them not to do. And, you know, it never works out well. It just absolutely never works out well. And, you know, you saw at the start of this how poorly it went as far as the information exchange. And I don't think it affected the investigation at all at the worker bee level. But from the folks outside looking in, you know, you get unnecessary chatter because, you know, you don't want to watch. You don't want to listen. You don't want to hear. But you do. You hear little bits and pieces. And that's the thing when, as the investigator, you know you're working your tail off and you're getting folks from around the country, around the world saying, oh, my God, these guys don't know what they're doing. And they truly do. And so it creates that outside chatter that doesn't need to be there. But it's always going to be there in some form or fashion.
Yeah. David Sarney, so moving ahead here, the Bitcoin deadline arrives on February 5th. Now, according to some reporting, much more recent than the early, you know, days of this, what we learned, or allegedly have learned is that investigators do not send the millions of dollars that's being requested. In fact, they send only about $152 in Bitcoin, which in investigator law enforcement parlance is sort of tickling the wire. They send a little bit of money, hoping that this wallet is touched, and then they can kind of jump on it. A lot of this comes from this guy, Howard Blum, who we're trying to get on the show tomorrow night. He's a very well-known investigative reporter. Again, he worked on the Brian Koberger case. He's worked on a lot of others. He's been in the business many, many years. So he's the one who's breaking some of this news that they quote-unquote tickle the wire. And so when that sort of bubbled to the surface, there was a lot more heat back on Bob's old department saying, why the hell were they tickling the wire? Why weren't they getting the money from, you know, the Guthries and then paying it back once they retrieved it? Blah, blah, blah. Is it a mistake in retrospect that they only paid $152? Is it not a mistake? What are your thoughts?
Again, you had some information that they had that may have said that they were the ones involved with Nancy's abduction because they had information that no one really had. You don't pay ransoms. I mean, what it is I was in narcotics for about 8 years. You have flash money. You flash money, you're expecting to get it right back. They're putting it was like $300. Is Bitcoin traceable? It is. They wanted to see if the account was active or not. And apparently they didn't take the bite, which if you're asked for $6 million and you got $152, you're not touching it. So they could have felt that this is not the thing to do and they left the money in there. It was an attempt to gain some sort of contact to see, is this a viable account that we can tie into that note? That's why they did what they did. It did not come out the way they expected it to be. I don't know why 152 was a number. Yeah, I mean, that's an unusually odd number to be doing. I mean, if you're looking at the millions of dollars, why not 1,000?
And for full disclosure, that is, from what I understand, that's coming from Howard Blum, who we are inviting on the show tomorrow. Hopefully he will accept. But that is one reporter, so we don't know. But that's the number he put out there. And he's an excellent reporter. I mean, he digs deep, as far as I know. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. That is a very odd number.
So that means that if that said to him as a reporter, that meant that information is being leaked to him. Because as far as I remember, I think they said it was $300 they put into the account. Mm-hmm. That was from my understanding, dealing with this case for as long as I've been involved working on this, or at least on the other side of it, not as a detective. Right. But 152, where'd they get the number from? So someone wants to leak that information to him if that's the case. But it was just a way of seeing if it's active. And there was no bite. And now, what do you do on that fact? You're still working the lead you have. Remember, people were looking for about 10,000 hours worth of investigative video. You're trying to get video for this. We don't even know what vehicle they left the scene from. And, you know, I don't live in Arizona. I don't live in that area. It's dark. They had to have access. Apparently, as this investigation has gone forward, we've presumed that there was some sort of attempt prior to do a recon of the location. We had a video or at least a still of someone similar in features that was there earlier in the month that went there. You know, there's a lot of things. There are a lot of leads to go on. And as big as that task force is, there's only 24 hours in a day, 7 days a week. And you're trying to get all that information and tie it in. Those leads go everywhere and everything has to be addressed. So every question is out there. We have to answer. So they have 10,000 questions. We have 10,000 answers. So unfortunately, that's the way this case has been going. There's just been a flood of information. And the information they have was enough to try to get a bite, and they didn't get the bite on it.
Yeah. Shout out to Aquarian. I appreciate that, David. Becoming a YouTube member. Everyone, become a YouTube member. Be hip. Be cool. Have fun. Become a member. Why not? You just have to click a button. Denise asked, well, why is this information being shared now? And that's because of reporters. And that's the way this country works. And you've got this guy, Howard Blum, who's tenacious. And here you've got, and that's what his reporting is. Is it 100% necessarily true or accurate? I don't know. He knows his sources. But could that number 152, Cloyd Steiger, mean something to Nancy so they could prove they took her? I mean, what do you make? It is a very odd number on a $4 to $6 million range that they're asking for. And now law enforcement puts in $152 to see if they'll, you know, nibble on that. You know, I'm not a criminal. I don't think I would nibble on $152
Probably not. Asking. It is an odd amount, and I don't know why they would put that amount in there unless there was a reason or unless that fact is just not true. You'd think they just put a round number in there. I think they put like $1,000 in there, right? $1,000, you know, they spend that in a minute. So is that enough to make the guy go, oh, I'll take $1,000, you know, try. But 152, it's an odd number. And maybe it means something. I don't know. It could, but I'm thinking probably not.
Yeah. Bob, to you, you can weigh in on that as well. But Kelly and a bunch of other people, and since you're from the area, I've asked, I wonder if they're investigating the homeless encampment near her home. I mean, there's a lot of transients in Tucson. I mean, Bob, what are the chances that a transient out on their luck, you know, is using a hefty bag to carry their, you know, belongings around and is going to go and do this? But have they checked the encampments?
I'm sure they have. Now, I'm not familiar with any major encampments around near her house, but you get down near, you know, River and First, River and Stone there. That's where some of our bigger camps pop up, which is, you know, 20 minutes from there. But this was not a homeless person. This was not someone who was down on their luck.
And Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, but guys like Aaron Cross, who's been on the show and is an excellent sergeant, I mean, the guys patrolling know some of these people who are in the encampments, and word gets around, right? It's not like they're living in a sealed vacuum, these people.
Absolutely. The folks know each other. The officers working it, working the areas, know them. They know what's going on. There was the Coral something or other who was wanted for kidnapping, who they ultimately arrested a few days ago, and they said it was close to Nancy's house, which was 7 miles away, so not real close. But, you know, that was transient on train. That's what that was, homelessness on homelessness crime right there. Completely different than what's going on here with the scouting of the area weeks earlier, the preparation. You're not going to have a homeless person put a brand new Target or Walmart backpack on and jackets and things like that. And real quick on the Bitcoin, it probably started as 300 and went down to 152. If you follow Bitcoin, they put in a percentage of a Bitcoin. So it wasn't the dollar amount, it was a percentage. So that's why it changed.
That's a good, that's a great. That's why we have Bob Krieger on. Look at this, Allie and Callie. Hey everyone, first time here so far. I love this channel. Love having you here, Allie and Callie. Hit that subscribe and like button and come back. And look at this. Thank you for the welcoming comment. We've got the, I always say, best guest, better community. We do this Monday through Thursday. And if you're brave enough, Allie, tune in. Well, not this Friday, because my mom is not here this Friday. But Fridays, it's a little wacky with my mom, the oldest true crime podcaster in America. But Krieger, let me come back to you, because now we get into the controversy here. So now February 6th, keep in mind, the quote-unquote abduction happens on the 1st. Now, 5 days later, according to Howard Blum, B-L-U-M, he writes for Airmail. This story just landed over the weekend. So, and according to him, a new communication arrives on that date, February 6th. In it, there is an apology suggesting Nancy has died, indicating that her death may have been accidental or unintended, and discusses money in exchange for returning her remains. The ransom noter reportedly just says, and I quote, "We're sorry." Bob Krieger, your reaction to this? This is a big piece of news, and TMZ says not so fast, but go ahead.
What I will say is I heard that early on, around that time frame. So that is not brand new news to me, but I didn't have any sources or saw anything. So it wasn't something that I was going to even discuss. But I did hear that exact thing early on, to the point that it went down to a half of a Bitcoin. That's what they were then asking for information to where her body's at. And it would not surprise me. Again, you'd have to look at all these communications individually, you know, look for writing styles, use of words, punctuation.
Bob, I was going to ask you, what about IP addresses? Like, I mean, don't they have to, because the person who wrote the note on the 2nd or 3rd, how did they know it's the same person now writing this "I'm sorry" note on the 6th?
Exactly. And even if you're spoofing IP addresses, you're not going to get the same one every time. So that's why you're looking deeper than just, you know, all of those things that matter. And you're probably going to get a pretty good feel for note to note to note. If I wrote you three emails over three separate days and David wrote you three emails, you'd be able to tell the difference just in our writing styles. Things like that would pop up. So I imagine the investigators are pretty confident based on all of those things, whether they're coming from the same person, whether they're legitimate or not. And like I said, I heard that very early on as well, the exact same things that's coming out now. It would not surprise me. I've thought since very early on that Nancy probably died very quickly, whether it was while she was still in the house and they just took her to keep evidence with them, or very quickly. There's so many other reasons when an old person is bound, someone elderly, someone in poor health, if they're bound and they lay down, they're probably not going to survive it for a few minutes. People don't realize that. If they lay her down in the backseat of a car and they drive away with her, by the time they get anywhere, she's probably going to be dead. That is the facts of aging and people in poor health. And I've seen it. I'm sure David's seen it. Cloyd has seen it. And people, bad guys, they don't think about that. They tie her up, put her in somewhere and move on. So all of these things, there's a legitimacy to them all. And going back to the investigators, I'm certain that they did all they could to track down who was sending them, where they were coming from. And still, if they didn't track it down, then that is something that they're still working on to this day, because you do have to work with the ISPs, the providers, all of that. You know, you can get all the subpoenas you want, but you still have to get the information from those folks. And sometimes it's not very easy.
Yeah. By the way, a little more news on our guy here. Bob Colella has a hearing now, July 2nd. He changed his plea to guilty, received a deal of some sort. I didn't think this would go to a trial. So maybe we'll send Bob down to the courthouse.
I was going to say, I'll do my first Cub reporting for you. I'll do what Jimmy Olsen did and shoot over there.
I would love it. Just don't bring your sniper rifle. It might scare him a little bit. Cloyd Steiger, to you, retired homicide detective out of Seattle. I mean, what is your move in real time if you get this note 5 days after the fact and they say that they are now, the quote, direct quote is, "We're sorry," and suggesting obviously that Nancy is no longer with us, discussing money in return now for her remains? And you heard Bob, who's in that world in Pima County where Tucson is, saying that he had heard very similar things. What do you do in real time with a note like that?
Well, the only thing you can do is the same stuff you did with the ransom notes. Although that rings a little true to me, because I thought when this first happened that she wasn't alive within a couple of days of it happening. And it does happen like that. And I believe they did not intend to kill her, but she just died. Like Bob said, that happens. And so maybe they just say, let's see what we can get your proof of life, but we'll give you your body for whatever. So you just got to do the same as everything else. You know, you're not going to give them the half a bit. That's a lot of money. Half a Bitcoin's a lot of money. So to just do it. But, you know, you're going to try to track them down. Again, see if it's the same. You can tell from the syntax and everything and some information. Maybe they had some kind of a code word they decided to put in there to show it was them talking to them. I don't know. And it kind of rings true to me. And I thought from the first time I heard about this case that she was dead right away.
Yeah, someone's asking about Coral. She's in jail. She's been arrested. If you don't know, she was wanted in Tucson on a kidnapping charge. Kurt Dabb, who's on the show frequently, knows of her and has arrested her, but she was arrested. Apparently zero connection to this. I mean, David Sarney, same sort of set of questions here. Okay, so now on the 6th, you get this email, and it now says, "We're very sorry," indicating that she's dead, but we still want our money. I'm sure, I have to believe, that investigators were all over this. How difficult or easy is it to confirm whether it is the same? I don't know where I didn't say allegedly, but here we go. She's COE. By the way, COE, I'm about to play your stuff soon, so I don't see it. But David, to you, I don't know. What do you do in real time here? I know investigators have to be looking at it very carefully.
Well, real time is when you get the information, what do you do with it? So you're going to do your work on that email. Try to find that out. Where are you going? And that's what it comes down to. Where are you going to go? We're saying we're sorry. We don't know. Again, this comes back to linguistics, and we talk about people's writing styles. My writing style is very different from others. does it help you to know that we all understood the fact that that was going to was probably going to happen, given the fact of frailty, her inability to have her medication with her. We all knew this was going to happen one way or another. The injury that she sustained, whether it was accidental or intentional, where she left blood on the scene, that's all well and good. You work it. Okay. My thing is, okay, where do you run to? We're sorry. Okay. Work that email, work that info, that communication, try to coordinate to try to see if all those emails are in fact from that same person or persons that you're looking to do. You know, running out in the street, and you know, this is where bosses get involved, and bosses like, go out there and do something. You don't just go out and do something. We got to have a reason to do it. There isn't much you can do where you are with the information that you have, so you have to work on that lead that you have, and that's all you got. And it all comes back to the same thing, and it's been from day one, the crime scene. Why was the crime, and it comes back to, why was the crime scene released so early? Because you, within that problem, creates other problems, because that's the only connection you had. We had no video footage, we had nothing else. We don't know what vehicle. That crime scene, and going back to what these people or person did, he avoided leaving DNA, so it's going to take time. And that's why you have what you have. And you feel for the family, you feel for the Guthrie family. You want to do what you can, but it's sort of like, what can I do? To run the leads, run the case, to I get something, to I get a hit on something, a positive ID, something that gets me to find the person or persons that did this.
Hmm. Racer Girl here says, whoever says we're sorry, especially in this type of case, that's just ridiculous. I mean, I'm sure they have profilers of the FBI who are also, you know, assessing these notes. But Bob, two very specific things that Howard Bloom brings into focus: a broken floodlight. So the ransom note reportedly references a broken floodlight behind Nancy's home. Mm-hmm. At the time that note was received, that information had not been publicly released. So investigators believe that whoever wrote that about the broken floodlight was either at the scene, saw the scene, or received information from someone who was there. And then you couple it with the Apple Watch. So you've got a broken floodlight and an Apple Watch. The note reportedly referenced an Apple Watch Nancy was wearing when she disappeared. Again, investigators reportedly believe that the detail of that Apple Watch was not public knowledge. People did not know she was wearing an Apple Watch. I guess you could maybe go back to some of these Today Show segments and take a wild guess if she was wearing it there. But Bob, specifically about this broken floodlight and this Apple Watch, your thoughts if this was not known to the public?
If it was not known to the public, there's ways to find those things out. Just the broken or, you know, turned off floodlight, very common. If someone was there a few weeks earlier scouting it, that'd be one of the first things I would do. So let's turn off these lights. Let's get a little BB gun and shoot a light out or something to help when I come back, things like that. So all of these things are facts that are going to lead the investigators to, you know, is this legitimate? It leads to legitimacy. But like you said, I've seen videos and pictures of her and her Apple Watch. I've seen pictures of her bed and her bedroom from segments that a charlatan, for lack of a better term, you know, these folks who are psychics, and I'm not bad-mouthing true psychics if there's such a thing, but you know what I'm talking about. There's people who can push information out and people just read into it a lot. So there's it's on both sides of it. But it does lead to some credibility to those initial emails of probably coming from someone who's involved or has some knowledge of what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. She was wearing that Apple Watch on some videos. And then Cloyd, could the quote unquote "we're sorry" message indicate that the note came from a female? You know, us men are incorrigible human beings and we would never apologize for anything. But on a more serious note, I mean, would the FBI have a profile or look at a note like that? I don't know what you can glean from it or not, but is that something that they would do?
They would probably do something like that, although I wouldn't put a lot of faith in that. I mean, what can you get from a paragraph? You know, you can't get anything. And so you know, maybe, and sometimes people, even bad guys, do have a hint of a conscience sometimes. Maybe he really was sorry if it was a man, but it very well could say it could be a woman who is working with the suspect or knows of it, or maybe in charge of a communication. and would say something like that. You're right. That's inconsiderate.
Mm. So we sort of have two shows in one. There's one more thing here. And then the COE reached out and got in touch with the Mexican people, the great people of Mexico, who've been searching off of a tip for Nancy Guthrie. We're going to play that in a moment. But first, from Criminally Focused, Bob, this has actually come up a lot, and I'm glad the COE just pulled this up here. Do you think since this crime was covered up so well that a current or retired law enforcement officer or officers could be involved? You know, to get Sheriff Nanos out of office, would anyone ever have thought, okay, this could help get Sheriff Chris Nanos out of office? Your response?
No, just flat out no. Now, saying that, could it possibly be? It absolutely could be. But to think that some retired cop is going to come to do this to go after Sheriff Nanos, I think that's a stretch. Quite honestly, I think it's an incredibly lucky person who's done this, to have avoided all the DNA traps and things like that. If you watch some TV shows, you're going to pick up hints and clues of how to avoid things. And if you're good about where you touch, how you touch, what you touch, you actually think about it. And there's some planning that went into this. You know, I don't think this is anyone out for retribution against anyone. I think this is just a horrible, horrible human being who chose to do this.
Mm. All right. So, of course, Harvey Levin steps in. He's with TMZ, and they were the ones reporting about these ransom notes. And he says, Howard Blum says, not so fast. Let's take a watch. COE, I think we need to bring that down. There we go. Here we go.
Talk about Nancy Guthrie and some communications I've had with the FBI that I haven't talked about until now. But I want to start with these reports that this ransom letter that we received kind of apologizes to Savannah Guthrie and her family for the kidnapping, and that that Nancy was no longer alive. That was not in the ransom note that we received. It is not in that ransom note at all. It does say that she's scared, but okay. But the ransom note makes no reference to Nancy Guthrie either dying or the kidnappers apologizing. Now, there is reference to Nancy Guthrie not being alive anymore, but that is from the person who sent us multiple emails saying that he knows or knew where Nancy Guthrie was and where the kidnappers were, and he wanted money in return for information. We passed that along to the FBI as we did the ransom note. But this person kept sending us emails. And early on, he said, time is of the essence. And then a few days after the kidnapping, he said, time is no longer of the essence, meaning she wasn't alive. So that's where that came from. Not the people who kidnapped her, but from the person who was sending us these notes.
I'm going to stop it there. It goes on for a little bit, a little longer. But David Sarney, a couple of things here irritate me. Number one, it's like he's speaking out because he, in his mind, he thinks he got scooped by Howard Blum of airmail. And so now he's like, no, I've got to correct the record. The other thing that I don't think Harvey Levin realizes is these guys are acting as though they've got the case file in front of them. What Howard Blum is talking about might not be exactly what Harvey Levin's talking about. It could be a different note that we just don't know about. And maybe Howard Blum doesn't know that Harvey is talking about this, and Harvey doesn't know that Howard, you know, like, if we don't know, nothing has been laid out to the public or the reporters. So Harvey is speaking like this expert on the ransom notes, but he doesn't really know what has been received and in what quantities. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, this is, you know, with the police department, the NYPD, we have what's called the marshal of evidence, getting all your evidence together. Could what TMZ getting is part of evidence that TMZ got, and what Howard has is what Howard has. So this is where the battle of the media comes into play, where you're like, who's going to one-up each other on what information I have? I have this, you have that. It could be totally separate information. That's the thing. And the only people that really know what those notes say are the investigators who are taking the, who are working this case. And that's what we have to go on. And that's the one thing about that's why I never speculate, because once you do, you put yourself in a pigeonhole and you live that confirmation bias. If I believe it, we don't know whose information is even correct anymore. What was the FBI getting from TMZ? Was it similar in content to what the media was getting? Was it the same emails? Was it the same context? That's why when it comes to taking all this evidence together, it is a monumental effort. And as this task force dwindled, you now have fewer and fewer investigators being able to do all of this. And the thing is, it goes back to bosses. What are you doing with this? What are you doing with that? When you really should be focused on what you have. And when you do this, detectives have to be selected to do one item at this. You gotta sort of have, you can't do everything. You have to be able to do something. So maybe one few detectives working on the emails that they got from the media, on the news networks, what they got from TMZ. Did they coordinate? Did they coincide with each other? We don't know. And that's why a lot of the information gets very jumbled now. I think after 140 something days, a lot of people don't know which end is up at this point on the outside end. But you know who does know? The detectives who have this case. The detective who has the case.
100%. I don't know. If it was me and I had these, I'd have to think long and hard before I would certainly go to police or the FBI. I don't think I'd be doing what Harvey's doing here. But let me play a little more, then we'll get Cloyd and Bob's take. And then we're going to take you inside the search, a 2-in-1 show. Inside the search for Nancy Guthrie in Mexico. But stand by here for a little more, Harvey.
Now, that person wanted effectively $100,000. He actually reduced it at some point, but that's what he wanted in return for giving information about the whereabouts of Nancy Guthrie or her remains and the kidnapper. This person also said that he was afraid that he might be implicated. He had a burglary on his record from, I think he said, 11 years before. And apparently he knew these kidnappers well enough that he was afraid he might be implicated. He also said he wanted to go underground, which is why he needed the money, because he was afraid that they would exact revenge on him for blowing the whistle on the kidnappers. So the FBI never paid that money, or never got the Guthrie family to pay the money to the person who was sending us these letters, these emails. I will tell you that the FBI did put around $270 in the Bitcoin account of the kidnappers. And we knew that. We were asked not to talk about that while all of this was going on. But they wanted to see if they could trace that person. They couldn't.
That's the 152.
As for this other person, the FBI took it seriously. They felt, at least in my communications with them, and I had numerous communications, they felt that this person might indeed know. For some reason, they never paid or never asked the Guthrie family to pay that person for information leading to the identity of the kidnappers and Nancy Guthrie's remains. I was always confused about that because I'm a skeptical guy, but there's something about those emails that made me believe that this guy may well have known who the kidnappers were. And the reason I say that is that initially he said, in the first letter, he said, time is of the essence, meaning you better hurry up. I can tell you where she is. But then the next day he wrote, time is no longer of the essence. If somebody is scamming and wants to get money, why would they say time is no longer of the essence? You want to say, no, time is still of the essence, so you can get the money and make people feel that it's urgent to pay it. For him to say it's no longer of the essence, to me, it felt more truthful because he was taking away the urgency to pay the money. So I always had this gnawing sense that he might be indeed legit. But for some reason, the FBI never pulled the trigger to pay the money. So
this goes on for, I can't take it anymore. So Cloyd, yes, Detective Cloyd Steiger. This now is basically a sword fight of sorts between Howard Blum of Airmail and Harvey Levin of TMZ. Again, Harvey speaking with, it bothers me with this tremendous authority about these notes as though he is in the case file and knows exactly which notes were delivered when and how many, all these things. I mean, does he make a point or should he just, is he just?
No, I mean, he doesn't know. He thinks all the notes came through him. He doesn't know that. There could be others that came through other sources, right?
100%.
I don't know. My question has always been, I want 100,000, whatever. The reward was that much, you know, drop the dime. You can be anonymous for a while and collect the reward. Why the secret? They're not going to pay secret Bitcoin. Come forward and get the reward. Give the information. Well, you have to give the information first. They verify it's legitimate. They'll give you the money, you know. And so the FBI should not have paid based on that. They should have said, well, you know, there is a reward and it's about as much as you're asking for. So if you just tell us and we'll keep you confidential until we can't anymore. And by that time, maybe you'd be able to, you know, low key and go underground, like you say.
Bob, I'll give you a shot at the Harvey Levin, Howard Blum battle over the scoop here. Your thoughts?
Not much. TMZ got some emails. That's it. It's going to happen in every high-profile case. It's the media keeping themselves relevant. Like David and Coit already said, who knows? Nobody knows the amount of information that went to the investigators. That's all that matters. And at some point, it's just they're going to go on and on and on and keep talking about it. And honestly, that last clip was just there's nothing to it. You don't know what you don't know. We don't know what we don't know. And the FBI and law enforcement is never, ever going to pay a ransom. So to die on that hill was kind of silly as well.
Agreed. All right. So moving on, this is the final bit. And I think the COE, I think it'd be a good idea to clip this last part of the show as a video. So an anonymous caller, unrelated to all of this, but out in the media, did contact a volunteer search group in Sonora, Mexico, which is just across the border, and said, we heard that Nancy Guthrie is buried on the Mexican side of the border. And so they shout out to Dara, love STS Nation. Thank you. Appreciate that. So the COE was able to get in touch with Ramona. She's with a group called Biscando Corazon Nogales. I know Corazon is heart. I know Nogales is Nogales, and I have no idea what Biscando is. But Bob, how's your Espanol?
I can arrest you and tell you to do things with your hands, and that's where it ends.
You order a margarita.
Yeah.
How do you say stop what you're doing? You're under arrest. Do you know how to
Alto
say
Alto suesto arrestado. There you go. And if we're I know all the commands if we're serving a search warrant at your house.
Bob has a worse accent than me by a mile. Who has a worse Spanish accent, me or Bob? It's got to be Bob. But
that's the Polack from Chicago coming out in me.
They ever laugh at you when you do that?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
We both get a chuckle out of it because I know it's true as well.
All right. So COE, I think this is it. This is the COE. We really worked hard to do this. The problem is that these people don't stop searching. And they're in the middle of the Sonoran Desert. So it was next to impossible to get a signal. This is what the COE got. Here we go.
Corazones en Nogales, Sonora. ¿Qué hacen y por qué lo hacen?
Nosotros somos un colectivo que...
We're a collective or group that searches for missing persons. Why do we do it? Because there's a need. There are many mothers searching for their children, many children searching for their fathers and mothers. So these collectives arise out of the need to find missing people. It's important because it started from people searching for their loved ones, but in reality, we now look for everyone. And why did you start to look for Nancy Guthrie?
Por la señora Nancy recibí.
For Nancy, we received an anonymous call informing us that she was located in the area where we have been searching for missing people, which is the Mariposa area, as we commonly call it. It was a call, and it was specific. It was a short call. They didn't say a lot. But they mentioned Ms. Nancy Guthrie and said that we should go and look for her in the Mariposa area and that we would find her there. We were looking for clues. All of the missing people, or the majority, 99%, are no longer alive. So we go out, we look for them, and most of them are sadly dead. That's how it is in these searches. For us, this is a new situation because we didn't know Nancy or her story. We search for our missing people that are from here, Nogales, Sonora. They're the ones we mainly look for because the families volunteer to help us. But since we received information about this woman, Nancy, and that she may be close by, for us, she's become another missing person here in Nogales, Sonora. How do you decide to go and check something out? We never know if a tip is real or not. We always go and investigate all the anonymous tips we receive. When the anonymous tip is urgent and insists that we're nearby or that we're just there, we go back immediately to the area again and again. And that's what we did with Nancy. Some anonymous tipsters are persistent, and they'll call you again and say, hey, you were nearby. And we say, no, it wasn't there. Nothing was there. And they'll tell us it was the other way. So then we go back. We can do 10 searches in the exact same spot and not find anything. Sometimes it's not until the 12th visit that you see something that catches your attention, you know? Searching is, well, it's really just walking, walking, and walking. We go up and down hills. We walk across streams. We rule out things that we think could be a gravesite. But mainly our work is walking, ruling things out, and checking different points along the way. And we look for small signs or some things that are out of place. That's why we're called searchers, because we dedicate ourselves to the meticulous hours of searching. And it takes a lot of tries to find some answers. Sometimes anonymous tips will also tell us to go north, and it turns out the gravesite was to the south. And how are you doing all of this? We're doing it alone, but with the support of the Mexican government. Why? Because we as a volunteer group always go out on searches on our own, but accompanied by Mexican government agencies like AMIC, State Police, Municipal Police, the National Guard, and sometimes ADENA. We regularly go out on searches on Saturdays. We leave at 8 or 8:30 in the morning, always accompanied by security. We send a request to the prosecutor's office on Monday or Tuesdays to schedule the outing, and then we go as a group. We have 8, 10, 13, sometimes 15 people, and the rest is security. It's all volunteer-based. Nobody gets paid for anything here. It's usually families who are also looking for their missing loved ones who join the group. The only exception is we do have some young people studying criminology. They come here from the universities in Nogales, Sonora, and they help us on the search.
Amazing reporting by the COE. I don't think I've seen that. That is the head, Ramona, of this group that searches on the Mexican side. The group did not find Nancy or any connection to her in Mariposa area of Sonora, Mexico. They did find other missing persons. They've gone out to search 3 different days and said they're going to continue. They say that they never stopped searching. Bob Krieger, your reaction to watching this, and apparently they found the remains of 25 different human beings in that desert. 25. It is basically a burial ground for people crossing and I don't know, other bad stuff that happens out there. Just what about the strength of these people to go out there and search?
I think it's amazing. Hearing what they do took me back to my time in our border crime unit where we were doing the exact same thing. And what advantage they have in Ramona's told, just like I've told in the past, she's told where to go, and sometimes they go and they might be within feet of something, and the desert is so vast because it's the exact same desert there that we have. You know, the desert doesn't know the international boundary. The terrain is exactly the same, so they're dealing with the same issues. They're like, hey, you were so close. But the key there is they're getting information. She got information that Nancy might have been there, information to that other folks might be there. And that's, on the U.S. side, why some searches aren't happening. That information is not coming in. If that information is coming in and someone said, hey, around Aravaca, around Ruby Road, around these areas is where it might be, I promise you that there's going to be large groups of law enforcement out there doing searches. What these folks are doing is awesome. Unfortunately, the desert is like that. It's unforgiving. It's harsh. A lot of people die in the desert. Some are dumped there, but the majority of the bodies they're finding, I'm sure, are probably just folks who succumbed to the, it was 109 today. So it's just how it is. People aren't built for that long term in the desert.
Yeah, you can go from feeling okay to awful in the desert very, very quickly. I've experienced it myself, and there's a lot of bad things that could happen if you, especially if you lose your way. Abby Crossing, friend of mine, friend of the show, friend of the COE's, huge accolade, and thank you to the COE. My own poll, who wants to see the COE on camera more often, doing more of this? She's good at it. She's been doing it. Look at this, COE, the real bad-ish of STS. Detective Cloyd Steiger, you know, that was an interesting look. Now, Sheriff Chris Nanos has said, no, no one is searching. I'm not allowing anyone to search on the American side. But here you have these Mexicans on the Mexican side of the border off of a tip. And she never said it, but the tip seemed to be credible enough that they are continuing to search and said that look, we're going to just keep going out there. What do you make of this anonymous tip? Do you think there was something with it that made it, you know, more, I don't know, pertinent or for these people to go out and search the way they have been searching?
Yeah, well, first of all, good for them. I mean, man, that's incredible. It's a lot of hard work and, you know, they're doing it for nothing and good for them. And hopefully either Pima County or the FBI or somebody is contacting the police in Mexico to see where they can find out about these tips. But it seems credible. I thought early on she's probably might be in Mexico because nobody stops you crossing the border south, only coming north, right? So they could slip her in there pretty easily and it'd be easier. So, I mean, I think it's – I want to know what the tip said and things like that. And, again, this may be not the people but somebody that knows something.
Yeah, well, the COE is pronounces Spanish much better than Bob or I. She actually speaks it fluently, although her grandfather used to make fun of her for not. Shout out to Papaya, who's no longer with us. I don't know. COE, maybe we'll get her back on and get, you know, kind of an update here. David, to you, again, I'm interested in this for many reasons, but one of them is this anonymous tip. And it was never really explicitly stated, but it was sort of intimated that the tip was enough for them to want to keep searching. I mean, she told the COE that they're planning to keep this up. Like, they're not going home. And, you know, the desert, it's like finding a needle in a haystack. So your thoughts about, you know, the veracity of this tip?
Yeah, I think with the volunteer work that they're doing, it's, again, extremely commendable. You don't see that much, very often with people going out of their way to look for people they don't even know. But it's viable to them because she even said, like, this is something that it came to our attention. We weren't aware of it. But obviously something came of light with that conversation, that tip that came in. And I think we have to look at the fact is, how valid was that tip? It's valid enough that they believe that there's something of substance. They wouldn't be going into the desert of where that is. And it seems like when they do these canvases, in a sense, that people are telling them like directions of where to look. So they have an idea. Could it be that person who's just who had some sort of knowledge? And, you know, we go back to all of these things, you know, with TMZ and the media and all this. This seems like it came out of the woods where it wasn't somebody who's looking to get fame and fortune. Like it seemed to be the way Harvey's pushing it out there. It's looked like somebody has a legitimate reason to say to these people, Nancy's body's there. And reality is she's a maker. So that's something that you would have to look at as far as if you're looking for a body, will there be a body found anywhere? I'm not saying they're going to find it or somewhere, that there's a pacemaker. So this obviously is going to be one of those searches that you can possibly find. You know, this has been an awful thing for so long. And you suffer for the family, but, you know, you're hoping to get the best possible results at this point.
100% agree. This is a very important comment. We'll get one more comment from Bob and then final thoughts from everybody. From Locked and Loaded, perfect name for Bob Krieger, former SWAT commander. There is an Indian reservation. There's a tribe in Tucson, the Tohono O'odham Nation, 12 miles from Nancy's, that the border could have been crossed through all their back roads. I mean, Bob, I saw you quoted when this was going on, I saw you quoted in a piece, I don't know from who or what, but you said that the Tohono O'odham Reservation is very important in all of this. How do you go about searching? Do you know if that area was searched? Do you need to get reservation police? How does that work?
Has it all been searched? Absolutely not. It's just so big. Like the volunteer group, they're going to a very specific area. To say the reservation is 12 miles from Nancy's house, it's also 112 miles from Nancy's house because that's how big the reservation is. It goes right into Mexico, very open borders. Because there is no fence, there is the Tohono O'odham Nation is actually fighting with the federal government right now about the border wall. Another case in the last week or so has been filed about that. So it's so vast. Without some viable information, a good tip, you can't just go start looking. You have to be able to start somewhere. Is it possible? Absolutely. I still, my gut says she's probably not in Mexico because that's a lot of work that could just the same result could happen in the United States without having to cross international borders and things like that. So there's so many areas to be searched. Hopefully they keep getting information. These folks who are calling the volunteer groups in Mexico, hopefully they're calling the sheriff's department, the FBI, and telling them the exact same thing so they can work together. And if it happens to be because the Mariposa point of entry is just east of Nogales or west of Nogales, just right there. They can work together and coordinate that. So if they need to look on the U.S. side, they can do that as well.
Mm. If remains were found, would they have any info left on them after this long? Cloyd Steiger, that's a difficult question. You're the homicide detective. After 142 days and some of that in the summer heat, I guess it just became summer. I don't even know what date it is anymore. But after 142 days, Cloyd, what would happen to a body in the desert? And my final question to you is what's the one question you want to know the answer to at this point besides why and your final thoughts?
Well, it would be skeletonized. There's no question about that. But I'd like to point out we get DNA from dinosaur bones. So, that's not – they would get it from the bone marrow. And it wouldn't be – matching the DNA on her would not be an issue. Dental records, I don't know what – things like that, the pacemaker, medical imaging, that's not an issue. I don't know. I mean, you had obviously who did it and things like that. But again, just put all your trust in the guys doing the work, the worker bees, not the administrators. And they're working, they're doing everything they can, I'm sure.
I can just picture back in the day, Detective Steiger getting... very unhappy about the chief saying annoying things on TV and the stuff that went on behind closed doors. Detective David Sarney, I'm sure that happened in New York City as well. I don't know, David, everyone asks, is this case ever going to be solved? So that's a good one in terms of final thoughts here. I mean, I feel like all these cases, it's just a random afternoon and all of a sudden people start buzzing. Did you hear they made an arrest, Is that going to happen in this case? And how far along from now, your final thoughts?
You're not going to know because, as we see how the media has co-opted this investigation and said that detectives, they did this and is editorializing on that. There's a case detective on this who's doing the work. And the thing is, when it comes to these cases, and I worked in New York for a while, you have those cases that continue, but you still have other work to do. But that's going to be that's your white whale in a sense. And you want to get the information available to you. They had so much information coming in. And they had so many people working this task force. It's minimized now. So will you get the rightful conclusion to this? You hope. I can't say it will happen right away. We know in the beginning of this case, you saw a lot of people getting arrested and a lot of movement on it. Then you had a chief putting out information that was inaccurate. And it seemed the optics of the case, these guys don't know what they're doing. But they do. And it's an ego-driven business as a detective. You want to see it to come to the rightful conclusion. It may take time. It's not going to be a week. It not be a day. It could be another month. It could be a year. But the reality is you want to at least get some conclusion for Nancy's family. That's what it comes down to. Something that you can say, this is what we have. This is what we've done. And this is where we've recovered what we can. And the case is not over. Then it's still considered it's still a murder investigation because of the violence that it took that this person was abducted. So they're still going to find something with this. and you're going to see a conclusion somewhere. How long it takes, I can't tell you. It's a matter of how the facts get you there. It's not what you think, it's what you can prove.
Yep. And, you know, law enforcement, they're like parents. You want them to give you the answer, but they can't always do it. So huge thanks to David Sarnie, the NYPD, Cloyd Steiger, formerly of the Seattle PD. Bob Krieger, retired lieutenant and SWAT commander, gets the final word. I forget who it was, Bob, but on the show, we had someone who's in the military, and he said while they were in, you know, Iraq, they were like on a mission, and this person was just laying on the ground, and his own members of his platoon couldn't see him or find him because he was so well like camouflaged into the desert there. I mean, it is possible that these people are searching the right area and just didn't find the right spot even. I assume that that is a possibility. And I don't know, what do you say to all the people, particularly in Tucson, who are so frustrated at this point and feel horrible for the Guthrie family and want resolution? Your final thoughts.
Be patient with the process. The detectives know this can take a long time. You've seen it day in and day out. These cold cases sometimes don't get solved for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. It might take that long. They might go to trial with someone without a body. A lot of different things can happen. But just be patient with the process. Everybody wants immediate resolution, that immediate gratification. And I think 140 some odd days into this, we know that's not going to happen now. So let the detectives, let the investigators do their job. When information needs to be put out, when the public needs the help, that'll be put out. When good information needs to be put out, they're going to do that as well. Trust the process. These guys and gals are doing the best work that they can with what they have, with the tips that they have on. And it's going to come to a resolution sometime, but it might take a long time. So patience, patience, patience.
Another amazing panel. This is why we say we've got the best guests in true crime. It is not a tagline. It is our reality. Big thanks to Lieutenant SWAT Commander Bob Krieger, retired Detective Cloyd Steiger, retired NYPD Detective David Sarnie, and Judy Herbert here with the final super chat. And Tina Duclos, member for 20 months. Thank you so much. We'll be back tomorrow night on your way out. Hit that like and subscribe button. It helps us a ton. We invited Howard Blum on. Will he come on tomorrow? I told Steve Cohen, ask Harvey Levin. Imagine if we get Blum versus Levin with Waldman.
Oh, you know,
we can make a lot of jokes about that.
UFC fight.
Yeah, that could be pretty crazy. So tune in tomorrow to see what we've got. Love you, America. Love you, New York. Love you, Seattle. Love you, Tucson, Arizona. Let's bring Nancy Guthrie home.